Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Now, as my next guest glides into the studio, I have to say, he's one of the most incredible CVs I've ever seen. A hospital doctor, an Ironman competitor, a model, an ambassador for Movember, to top it all off, an Olympic medalist. Philip Doyle, Irish Olympian. How are you?
Yeah, I'm the very, very best. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for coming in. That's quite the CV for a young man.
Well, when you actually, I was applying for training positions in the medical field last week and my CV actually could do with a bit of work, so I'll actually have to work on that this year.
Well, I'm glad I've inspired that. Okay, Philip, great. Thanks so much for coming in. And we've loads to talk about, but I want to bring you back a bit to the start because sport has always been a big part of your life in varied kind of ways. Is that correct? Take me back.
Gee, how far back do you want to go?
Well, where, as far back as you can remember starting to play competitive sport, I suppose.
I'd say running away from my father at the age of four was when I was told I could actually outrun him for the first time, was the beginning of it all. But like, I played anything that moved, running, jumping, swimming, whatever. But I was Gaelic football and soccer for years. Then I moved primary school to secondary school, went to hockey and athletics and squash and a few racket games, and then graduated from that then to university, where I took up rowing in the second year, and then rowing kind of just obliterated all other sports over the last 10 years and took over.
So, yes, you came to it relatively late then, really, didn't you?
Yeah, I was 21. Yeah. And it was a sort of last-ditch attempt at trying to bring some kind of competitive sport into my life again. I was kind of, I don't know, bumming around, really not doing much.
But bumming around, just training as a doctor.
Well, yeah, but I'd given up sport to do that. I was told in my medical interviews, you know, how are you going to balance? You know, it's impossible to do all the sport you're doing because you have to write a personal statement for the UK system. So they were all like, oh, look at all this amazing sport you're doing, but how are you going to do this medical degree? It's so intense. It's this, it's that. So I was like, look, that's a fair point.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because it is pretty intense training as a doctor, right?
Yeah, it's as intense as you make it. But if you don't make it intense, you might not get through the course, is the problem. But by the end of that, then I had sort of given up sport to focus on it, to build that CV. And then, ironically, I found myself with a lot of spare time at the weekends. I was working down here doing the modelling stuff that you were talking about. And the guy I was working with was a rower. And he was like, look, if you're looking for something to get your teeth into, we were training together in the gym, we were doing a bit of fitness together. And he was like, look, you're strong, you're tall, you're fast. Here's the number of the coach in Queens, in Belfast. Give him a call, head down, and then the rest is kind of history from there.
Well, it's kind of amazing because you could have just left it there.
I could have.
That's really interesting. Yeah. As an adult, you could have just left that opportunity behind you.
I could have. And if anyone has ever tried rowing, the first year is not pretty.
It's
you're kind of getting used to the spandex. You're getting used to a Lycra lifestyle. You're getting used to early mornings, being wet and cold in the winter, sitting under a bridge trying to warm your hands up at 6 o'clock in the morning in December while your coach is shouting at you from the launch. So it's not an easy path through that first winter, but you know, the summer racing just makes it so worthwhile.
My cousins are rowers, Gary, Neil and Owen, and they actually went to Sydney to the Olympics. So my brother's a rower. I've never done it. But rowing is, I live near the park and they come down from all the clubs to the park. And video, it looks so beautiful. Does it look like it's that difficult? It's really hard though, is it?
There's a friend of mine used to work in the city and he would cycle to work as I was finishing my training in the morning in my last couple of years of college, because obviously we go for 6 years and he had graduated at this stage, and he's cycling past screaming at me one day and he goes, you know, you look, don't look like you're really trying. And I'm in the boat absolutely dying, sweat lashing off me, huffing and puffing. He's like, it looks so graceful. And I was like, well, I'm glad it looks like I'm not trying that hard.
It does look really graceful, but yeah. I'm glad you're clearing that up for us, and your development into it is actually very interesting. You were kind of told not to do it by your course, basically, and it would appear training as a doctor probably seems like good advice not to do it. Yeah.
Well, at the time I was playing for the Irish hockey team underage, the Ulster hockey team underage, the school team for the first 11, and then I was also playing for two of my club teams, the firsts and the seconds. Wow. So I was training for five or six hockey teams at the time, which is an exceptional number of training sessions across a week, maybe 14, 15 training sessions.
What? How do you do 14 or 15 trainings in a week?
You'd be training twice a day. Wow. And on the Saturday, you would maybe have two matches or three matches sometimes. And then on a Sunday, you might have another double session as well. And some days during the week, you might have... We used to do fitness in the morning before school circuits. And then we would have school. And then you would have school training afterwards. And then you would have your club training that night. So you might have three sessions in a day. And plus, I was doing my own kind of like gym weight stuff as well to try and build up my strength. Too. So you're so much involvement in sport so early, and ironically now they invite me back to give talks on how to balance such a heavy level of sport and
well,
medicine.
You're an Olympian, yeah. So it worked out. But would you call yourself an obsessive person, or would you say that you're just committed?
I don't think I'm obsessive. I think I'm competitive.
Competitive.
Yeah,
okay.
Exceptionally competitive at everything.
Okay.
To the point where myself and my girlfriend struggle to go for cycles together.
What's her name?
Tiffany.
Tiffany, so, sorry for your troubles. You're legging it off in the park on your bike.
But we're learning.
So you go on to represent Ireland in August and you earn bronze medal alongside Dara Lynch. Was the podium in your sights for Paris?
Yeah, the whole...
Well, you've just answered the question a minute ago. You're so competitive. Yeah, go on.
The whole time it really was. In Tokyo, it was in the sights as well. And we fell short on the day. And I think we took a lot of those lessons coming forward. Dara was part of that process as well.
Oh,
he
really?
Was our spare for Tokyo. So he was part of that journey right up until the first race.
So what happened in Tokyo?
I think just a combination of things. A lot of things went our way. The COVID, the break away from each other, going back to work for, you know, the guts of 8 months, 8 to 9 months before that sort of took away a lot of the cohesiveness within the boat. Then Dara came in and did a phenomenal job and won a bronze medal at the Europeans with Ronan at that time. And then we kind of, then the three of us had to duke it out and trial to get back in to see who went to the Olympics.
Wow.
So yeah, there was a combination of things. We had some great results. We won a silver in the World Cup coming into the Olympics, and then things on that week just kind of ran away from us and we didn't get the result we wanted. But we took those lessons. We brought them forward. We looked more at the psyche of how to look into racing, what you need to do on the day, how to deal with that external pressure, because the Olympics is a stage you've never known.
What's the pressure like?
In Tokyo, it was intense. In Paris, it was immense. because there was, in Tokyo, one of my best friends, I woke up the next day after one of my races and I said, well, do you watch the race? And he said, no, I'm not getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, but Paris, it was an hour difference. It was so, everyone was so involved.
And you know what was interesting about Paris? I knew people who travelled to see the Olympics. And then I realised, of course, it's only a small flight away. We were much more connected to it this time.
I had friends from London who just hopped on the train.
Yeah,
in the
course.
Eurostar and
amazing.
Came over and watched. Yeah, their biggest complaint was the walk from the shuttle to the course, to be honest. But that pressure is, and everyone on the start line, I've said this before, everyone on the start line of Olympic Games is in the best they've ever been. And it's how you deal with that mental pressure on the day, like how you deal with that external pressure, the weight of expectation, the sleep the night before. You know, you're running through every scenario in your head, from standing on the podium winning gold with your hands in the air to taking your first stroke off the start line and flipping and falling in the water, which you probably haven't done for years, but it all runs through there. Like, your mind is one of the most magnificent things you own, and it'll do you the best in the world, or it'll completely wreck you as well.
So, well, yeah, I mean, you just painted a brilliant picture of the pressure and the way your thoughts will run away with you when you're under pressure and you're not. What's your skill? How do you control that?
I'd like to sit here with the Olympic medal in my hand and the medical degree and tell you I have it all figured out, but nobody does. You know, it's a complete journey, and we learnt lessons and we made some mistakes as well along the way. You know, we didn't win, we didn't break a world record, and nobody can say anything was perfect. We had a good outcome. But like you, as I was saying, we had six races internationally together as a pair and we won five medals out of six. So the medal was always on our mind, but it wasn't guaranteed. So to deal with that pressure, you have to sort of be constantly reflective. And we do it in medicine a lot. It's called reflective practice. You look at your actions, you look at what you've done, what can you learn from them, and what do you need to do to improve that action on the next time? So like that mentality of sport is so easily overlooked. You always think, I need to be in the best physical shape. But if you show up mentally out of whack for that race, you're no use to anybody. Yeah.
So kind of, to get to where you are now and for the future, Tokyo kind of had to happen in a way, do you think, the way it happened?
Yeah, it was a great time to learn. obviously, as an elite athlete, you want to maybe learn with when the stakes aren't so high.
Yeah, learn quicker.
Yeah, it would be nicer sitting here with two Olympic medals, but that's a very unique person who's able to do that. You know, the two lads in the lightweight double, Paul and Fintan, are sitting with two gold medals, and that's a testament to their mentality at that level.
Yeah. I've got a listener question here. Can I ask Philip if there's been a top class rower under 6 foot tall? Because it seems to me they're giants mostly, John has asked.
Paul O'Donovan is one of the pound for pound best rowers in the world, and he is significantly less than 6 foot.
There you go. That's answered. So, of course, Paris is amazing. What, is there a big difference returning home, Tokyo versus Paris? What was the difference?
Do you know what it's like in the middle of the night and the middle of the day?
That's different.
Pretty much exactly
day
how it
and
is.
Night.
Yeah,
really.
The last time we came back, we came together. We did one race over at the Henley Royal Regatta after Tokyo, and then off I went to work because I was expecting a little bit of something happening afterwards. Maybe
after Tokyo, yeah, nothing.
Nothing. Straight to work. Got the head down and worked on with my life, and I was happy out. This time I came back expecting to go back to work, and then had to keep pushing my start date back and back and back and back and back because there was so many events, so many this, so many fundraisers and getting involved in this and doing this day. So it just spiraled, and it's been a phenomenal. I have no complaints about the amount of time I've had to give to it afterwards.
We had a phenomenal Olympics as a country. We really did across the board. So thank you, because it was absolutely amazing as a viewer. We loved it as a nation. It was amazing. Well,
thanks to everyone at home, because the support was phenomenal.
Was it?
Yeah, you couldn't. There's one thing. It's the Irish time after time after time as supporters at the Euros in 2018, at the Rugby World Cups, at the Olympics. I haven't heard a bad word yet, and I haven't seen a bad thing yet. I haven't seen it all and heard it all.
Yeah.
But when I looked up and I seen I don't know how many tricolours up on that stand, like, it brings so much pride.
Friday night, you had a big night. The Olympic ball was on, centenary.
Yeah, it was fabulous. I met some rowers who I never thought I would ever meet in my life. I met the gentleman who won the last heavyweight men's world championship medal in 1974.
Go away.
Sean Dre in Nottingham, he won silver, and then we won the next one in 2019 in Linz. And I met him, and so we had a great chat. The event, there was a lady there from the 1968 Mexico Olympics.
Wow.
It's phenomenal. Yeah, 100 years, and we broke 1,000 Olympians at this.
That sounds incredible. Yeah. Wow. So 1924, the first team competed for Ireland in the Olympic Games in Paris. In Paris?
In Paris, yeah.
Wow.
Paris has had it three times, they're getting greedy.
And so it was a good night, had.
Fabulous.
Sorry, what was the woman
who,
from Mexico? What was her sport?
Oh, you're going to kill me. I've no idea.
Oh,
apologies.
No problem at all.
I meant to meet her, and it was my biggest intention to meet her on the night. But
she's there from 1968 Mexico. Yeah,
I think there was actually someone from the 1960. Gavin Noble, now our chef de mission, had mentioned that there were people were supposed to be there from the 1960 Olympics. Now, I didn't meet them, but I seen pictures of this lady, and I was just flabbergasted. She had the jacket on with Mexico 1968 on.
Wow.
The back.
That's amazing. Okay, so you are an ambassador from November this year. How did you get involved with that campaign, and why?
The short answer to that is I've always been looking for a cancer charity to be involved with. As you know, I lost my father to pancreatic cancer when I was in third year of college.
I'm sorry.
Or university. I keep getting shouted at for saying college. I'm not from America, but down here it is college. And from then, I always kind of tried to get in. We had done a naked calendar with the Rowan lads for another cancer charity. And then this time, they reached out to me. I try and do a few funny videos on social media. And then I did a funny video that they seemed to like about testicular cancer awareness. Then they approached me again and said, would you like to come on board? And I was like, do you know what? This might be my one. This might be my charity to get involved with.
Brilliant.
I love their messaging. I love what they do for mental health. I love the fact that there's a medical side to it too. And I was like, this ticks a lot of my boxes of what to get involved with. And obviously with the struggles that you have as an elite athlete, because everyone doubts themselves. We just have so many tools and resources. I have a clinical psychologist, I have a sports psychologist, I have a support network of my physio was probably my therapist as well, not physically, mentally.
I hear you. Yeah.
So I have so much support, whereas other men out there don't have access to that. So it's time to start breaking down some of those barriers to bring that into focus.
And tell people a bit more how they can get involved or what. How.
So there's so many ways. Mostly finding a way to bring people together is the best way. You can either grow yourself one. I tried, it was terrible. I kept I went into the children's A&E on Saturday and a lot of them screamed. So unfortunately my moustache was so pathetic I had to give up, so I'll have to find another way. You can run 60 miles, walk 60 miles or kilometres, miles if you're up north, kilometres if you're down here. And that's to represent that in the world we lose 60 guys every 60 minutes to suicide.
Okay.
Worldwide. 3-to-1 ratio men to women, which is it's pretty tells a story. And as well as that, you can bring people together and have some kind of an event. So, or if you have your own special idea, that's good too. But everything's on the Movember website where you can get every resource you need.
Brilliant. Listen, Dr. Philip Doyle, Olympian and Movember advocate, thank you so much for coming. It was great to chat to you.
Thanks.